Accession number 20007, Reel 2.
Jimmy Kelly, Reel 2.
Yep. Yes, we went up to Newcastle and we'd done a lot of training there. We'd done a heavy marching there, 10, 12 mile route marches, full pack. That's when they started this, that you walked 500 yards and you ran 500 yards. And we'd done that, a little Irish chap, McGilligan was his name, Sergeant Major then. He was only about, what, 4 foot 10, 4 foot 11? But a real stormer. A real good man he was. I got on very well with him. In fact, then I was on the motorbike, and we had the big motorbike boots. So they decided, oh, well, they're only getting destroyed with the heat from the exhaust from the motorbike. We'll dubbin them all. So when he took over, he didn't want them dubbin. He wanted them all highly polished. So he had to get all the dubbin on. And he was a good man that way. When you'd done the route march, he'd done it with you. Maybe not as much gear as you had, but he still done the route march with you. And we'd done a lot of work up there. CRS was at a little place called Seton Delaval. But all around that area, we'd done very well. We were up there for a day till 43.
Were you with the division at that time?
Yes.
What division was that?
I forget now.
It doesn't matter.
No, I forget what division it was. But we done a lot of pillbox there. A lot of pillboxes up around that way. And we manned them. I done a lot, as I say, a lot of the motorbike work up to the CRS in Seton Delaval and Blythe. The CRS was up on Blythe. And any dispatches, I used to go up there with them and come back again. But I only done that for about 9 months up there, and then they decided right off the motorbike, so I had to give up the motorbike then. They took the motorbike and somebody else got it, and we done all that up there.
What was your new role going to be once you'd taken away the motorbike?
Back into the company.
How did you feel about that after 2 years with the motorbike?
I accepted nearly everything. I was one of these easy-going fellas, well, that's what they want, that's what they'll get. And I went back in, and I was promoted up to full corporal then. And we took over, as I say, I was in a section, there'd be about 30, 35 in the squad. And we used to do, they were teaching me how to be an NCO, how to take... look after fellas and any problems, sort of problems out.
Can you tell me how you instructed people in drill?
The basic training is the 1-2, 1-2, left, right, all like that, and then you've done your rifle drill, up 1-2-3, down 1-2-3, the same with the saluting, longest way around, the shortest way down. And but most of them that you were there had already now done 3 or 4, maybe 2 year with you in a round, so we knew one another pretty well. And of course some of them respected you, some of them didn't, had a bit of a fun with some of them. And we used to go into Newcastle to the dance halls. That's where I met my wife, actually, in Newcastle. She was a Gateshead girl, but I met her there, and we got married in 1943.
Were you doing, as you said at that time, were you guarding the coastline in the pillboxes as well?
The coastline and the pillboxes right up the coast, right up the Newcastle coast, from Tynemouth, right up to Blythe, Ashington, all up that area.
Were there any other battalions stationed with you?
No. No, we were doing that all on our own. That was a section of the 10th Battalion. Right up the coastline, we've done from Red Blade, Ashington, New Biggin, all up around that area.
And in the pillboxes, what were you armed with?
A machine gun. There was a machine gun looking out over the one of the harbours there, South North Shields. Still there, the pillbox is still there. I was up there not so long ago, still standing. One of the only ones that I think they've taken most of them down, but that one's still standing, looking down over the harbour. right along the harbour.
And what would your drill have been if you'd have seen the enemy invading?
We'd have all been along the coastline with the machine guns, and of course you were, they'd have to come in on the boat, so probably they'd been intercepted before we got to them. But to stop any invasion, and any all around that area was all heavily barbed wire, and that all along the coastline there, all barbed wire. Or big rolls of barbed wire all the way around there.
Was it mined as well?
It was all mined, yes. The beaches were mined there. Nobody was allowed on them.
Would you have had support from heavier weapons behind you if an invasion had occurred?
I should imagine so. Not that we've seen many heavy heavy guns there. All we had was the light ones on the machine guns and that on the Bren carriers. That time there were no tanks up that area.
And how would you have communicated if the enemy had been invaded with the battalion?
Well, I should by the field phones, or I field phoned it'd be, or by the motorbike.
Would each pillbox either have a motorbike or a field phone?
The field phone would probably be in the pillbox with the pillboxes. But there'd be an officer probably in charge of a certain area, and everything went through him to be sped out. And he'd probably have a motorbike in there to get the message up quick.
And as a corporal, did you command a pillbox?
Yes. And of course, if there was no sergeant available, you'd take over the guard duty, guard commander on the guard.
So how long were you up there in?
I was in for about 18 months. About 18 months, and then we went to Barrow-in-Furness. Went into a new place just outside Barrow-in-Furness. It was a new barracks they'd built. So it was all, first time I'd been in a proper place, and it was beautiful there. You had your own hut, but so many people in the hut, sergeant and corporal in charge of it. So many men in each hut with your bed, you had the bed and everything there. Well, before that, all I ever had was palliasses on the floor.
Where was your actual billets when you were in the Newcastle area?
West Monkseaton.
And what were you in? Were you in houses or?
In houses.
Again, evacuated houses?
Evacuated houses, yes. Some people stayed, some people were evacuated. But it was West Monkseaton. Lovely semi-detached house, beautiful houses there. They're still standing actually, but I was stationed there. We went straight up from, as I say, Dovercourt up there. I got married in 1943, the 1st of May 1943, 6 weeks after I was on the ship to India.
So you've been posted to Barrow-in-Furness?
Yes.
What were you doing in the Barrow-in-Furness area?
We're doing basic training actually, because you're away from the coast altogether there. We were doing the basic training of more, now the Bren gun, the latest addition to the Bren gun and mortars and all now was more up to date stuff.
So had the kind of structure of your battalion changed then?
Yes. Actually speaking, we were a holding battalion there for to feed other groups. That's why we were there. That's when they started reorganising, that the motorbikes and that wasn't as good as they thought it'd be, and they started fading them out, that they weren't much good except for dispatch riding, that's all. They settled more then onto the Bren carrier, and I think they were introducing a few heavier attachments to each one then. I think they were bringing the artillery, so many to each, to build it up as a dunes.
Were you training with these various arms then? Were you
yes.
training more with artillery?
The artillery was there beside you. They were a separate unit altogether. They were separate to us. But from there, as I say, I've done maybe 18 months, 19 months there, and then
How long were you in Barrow-in-Furness?
About 18 months.
Oh.
18, 19 months in Barrow-in-Furness. And then we went to, that's where I got married from. I come up to Newcastle, got married, and just got back off leave, and I was sent on embarkation leave. 6 weeks after I was married, I ended up in India.
Had you any anticipation that you were going to India at all?
Oh, nothing. Nothing at all. There was nothing, no equipment, nothing at all. Till we got down to Liverpool, putting a troop ship, and then you know your equipment was there for you. You knew where you were going once you got in the boat.
So
excited.
Can you take me through that process from hearing to getting your embarkation leave to actually getting on board the boat? What happened?
There was 9 of us went down. 9 or 10 of us only from Barrow-in-Furness. And we were put all met on a train. And we were put down on the train and we got down to Liverpool. Your equipment was issued at Liverpool for your Tobies and stuff like that. But you weren't told where you were going. It could have been the desert or any place. And actually speaking, I was the last ship to the Suez Canal before they blocked it.
What was the ship you were on?
I can't remember the name of the troop ship. I can't remember the name. But 2 days outside of Britain, there was no potatoes. We got rice from then on. We ran out of potatoes. I always remember that. But we had... it was quite a pleasant journey. In the sense that we were overcrowded like everything else, all in hammocks, sleeping in hammocks on the troop ship. And I think it took about 3 weeks to get out there on the troop ship to Bombay.
Did you have any duties on board?
No. No, there was no duty. You lectures. All you got was lectures all the time. And when you were well out, you had an idea then where you were going. Once you got through the Suez into the Indian Ocean, well, that was it. You knew where you were heading.
Did you go through the Mediterranean?
Yes. I went through. I was the last one through the Mediterranean, through the Suez Canal. That's when it was 1942, was it 43, when they sunk the ship and blocked the Suez Canal.
It would have been 43 with you, wouldn't it?
Yes. They blocked the Suez Canal, and that was we were the last troop ship through, and then it wasn't reopened for 45, I think it was 44, when they reopened it.
You said you had lectures. What were the lectures on?
On machine guns, rifles, anticipation of where you were going. That you had to wear your hat all the time in the sun. How to behave as regards if you wanted to drink, you didn't drink during the daytime, or the sun got at you and you went off your rocker. But we had it was a pleasant journey, and you were occupied all the time. There was no such thing as boredom on it. There was always something going on around the ship or things like that. You get lost on the ships that easy.
Was it just your battalion on this? You know, you said there was 9 men. Was it other battalions going out to India?
The whole mixture. The whole mixture was on it. We were going out to a holding camp in Karachi. We landed at Bombay, then we went up. Took up to the holding camp. It was big. Oh, there was hundreds there, all in tents.
What was your initial impressions of India?
Very desperate, I'm afraid, when you get out there. You're never used to seeing what you're seeing, people begging on the streets and everything else. But we were there in this holding camp for, quite a while. And the trouble is, maybe from here, 500-600 yards to walk up to get your food. But when you went at first, you got your food, the birds would come down and pinch it all off your plate. So you had to be careful, and after that you put your hand over it. They even take your hand sometimes. But that was in Karachi. And then from there, I was sent out to, with some of us, to a place called Duncan Dam. It was a big, big reservoir. And that's where we started jungle training.
Right. Can you tell me in some detail what the jungle training consisted of at Duncan Dam?
Well, what I used, after being there a while, we were in tents again. After being there a while, I maybe take a dozen lads out for 4 or 5 days into the surrounding countryside, jungles and that, and basically live out there for 4 or 5 days with your rations to see how everything went on. And you could then throw grenades, live grenades and that, and show them how the reaction was on different types of stony ground, hard ground or soft ground. And the same there. Of course, the funny part about it is you don't realise sometimes the monkeys, that you'd have a group of lads for the first time you take them out, and you'd see the monkeys, someone throw a stone at them. Within a few minutes they were throwing stones back at you. And until they got to know, leave them alone, they leave you alone, they were all right. But now we've done quite a lot of that type of training there. And of course, when I went out there, you had the old-fashioned sergeant major that had been out there for 20 years, big handlebar moustache, and everything. He done nothing, everybody done everything for him, his walking stick and everything. But no, it was a good training, where it was up to yourself how to survive.
Did you find it useful, say, later on?
Yes, in a sense, no, in another sense. What I was trained for, as regards jungle warfare, it did materialise for what we'd done. After we'd been, I'd only been there a few weeks, I think it was, when we done a march over this range of mountains. I forget the name of the mountains, but it was the worst march I've ever done in my life. You were climbing like that for 3-4 hours.
At a really steep angle.
Down the other side, an hour you are down the bottom. And it rained heavy all the time we done it. And I went from there, we marched over and got under the Imphal Plains. And that's where then we knew what was going to happen. Because that's where the Jap was, just outside the Imphal Plains. That's where they halted them.
When you were training, what were the instructors like?
Well, most of them had never done much of the jungle warfare, you see. And the people that had done it was people that was due to go back home again. You see, at one time all you'd done was 3 or 4 years and then you were home. Some of them had been out there for 10 years, was just coming home for the first time. And they were learning as you were learning, let's put it that way. Now, a lot of them out there did not know what the Bren guns were. They'd never had the Bren gun. You see, they were an all Lewis water-cooled weapons. So anybody that was out there a long time, you had to teach them how to use the Bren guns and that. All the lads that we went out with, they knew because they had the training here. Now, you would find out that anybody that had been in India and been in the first campaign out there, they weren't keen to go back into it again. So most of them were coming home. So a lot of the lads that went into Burma with the Chindits were all raw recruits, like myself. They'd never done much. Some of them had come over, I believe, from Dunkirk and that over there, which was unusual. There wasn't many said done the two war zones, the Europe and Dunkirk, India.
So you were training with this. Was there any other things you were learning? Were you learning how to attack Japanese positions?
Yes, they dug rabbit holes and sat in them. But the point is, you see, in the jungle you can't dig very deep for roots and everything like that. And your best plan is to lie low, get behind gorse or bush or trees, anything like that. But there's not a great deal you can do as regards digging in. Now, the upper Kohima way, they reckon, that you could have done that. but not where we were. When we went to Imphile, we were given instructions, and that's when Wingate got lost.
Can I just ask you a little bit more about the training with that? Did you said you were then training with live hand grenades?
Yes.
What were you armed with yourself?
Most of us then had the rifle. There was one Bren gun, one Bren gun to every company.
So your section would have all been riflemen?
Riflemen, yes, and one Bren gun. And you had plenty of hand grenades, and you had the old-fashioned, what do you call them? Bayonet. The old-fashioned bayonet. A big long one, not a short one. And we all took turns carrying the Bren gun if we're on the march. We'd start maybe the first one at carrying, then we'd go right up and down the section to give everybody a turn at carrying it.
And you obviously knew by this time that you were going to be facing the Japanese.
Well, we first went up, and the idea was a very simple one. First of all, everybody thought we were going to march in. But what happened then was, we took onto this Imphile airfield and told we're getting on planes. Planes? Yes. But it was gliders. So the mules, you know, it was mules that carried some of the heavy equipment, the motors and that.
Had you trained with mules yourself?
No, it was muleteers that took the training, trained with the mules.
So you'd actually marched over the mountains onto the Imphile plane?
Yes.
And what happened when you actually got to Imphile before you got on the gliders?
Well, we'd done about 3 weeks in tents up among the gorse and up among the bushes and that, so nobody could see us.
Was this to continue training and acclimatising, or was it to just, were you just holding, it was just a holding action?
Just getting us all together to get everything equipped and ready for the gliders.
And what unit were you with now?
The 1st Battalion Cameronians.
Had you been with those as you'd arrived in India?
Yes. You were transferred onto the 1st Battalion straight away when you got posted back out to up around the Imphile Plains. We were in a big holding camp at first, and each unit was fed from that holding camp in Karachi.
So you were fed into the unit after your jungle training?
Yes.
And how did the 1st Battalion contrast with the 10th Battalion that you've been with in Britain?
Well, the 1st Battalion had been out there, they'd been established for years, so they were well established. But once again, all the old hands was coming home and all the new ones was just going out, so it was really a continuation of the 10th Battalion, but very few regular soldiers. They were nearly all conscripts or volunteers or whatever like that.
And have you any memories of the people you met as you moved into the battalion, NCOs and officers?
Yes. As I say, we all really moved in together. Now, when you got out there, as I say, you were in huts and tents. And there was quite a number of chaps there that was ready to come home. In fact, there was Foley, a fellow called Little Foley, Terry Foley. He'd been out once, and he never come back in again. He went home. He was due to come home.
So you were really a fresh battalion then, moving on to the Imphile plane?
Yes. All nearly all new. And I think there was about 20 got on, 20 or 30 got on each glider with four mules. And we took off and we landed behind the enemy lines in northern Burma.
How did that work when you got onto the glider? How did you load the mules and yourselves?
You went in with all your pack, and you stood up at the side of the gliders, you see, and the mules was at the back. Now the mules, one of them was shot on our plane, he went mad, All their stuff was left on them while we were in the air, while we were gliding. But what happens is that if you want to get 1,000 men in on gliders, you'd have to send 4,000. Hopefully that you'd get 1,000 out of that 4,000, because the areas that they stripped in the jungle for the gliders to land in, well, they couldn't hit them half the time. I was one of the lucky ones. I got out at the gliders, but what I mean, I seen three of them just banged, wrecked before they ever touched them, before they ever anybody got out of them.
And what were you doing in this role? What was the battalion going into the jungle to do?
There was two columns, what they formed columns. I was in Broadway, and there was another one, New York. Well, the column we were in was Broadway. We were to get in about 250 miles behind the enemy lines, right in the heart of the jungle, and the Burma Road. We had to put roadblocks on the Burma Road. Now, the other battalion, New York, should have marched in from the north, but the monsoons broke and they couldn't make it. So our column was split up into two instead of doing it one. And what you'd done, you'd put a roadblock down on the Burma Road, Stillwell Road, for 3 days. Now, you'd hold that position for 3 days, and then you'd withdraw. Now, one of the others, it put maybe 30 miles further down the road, they'd put a roadblock on then as you got out. And you'd walk maybe 20 or 30 miles north, and then when they come out, you'd put another one on. And I'd done four of them. I got wounded in the fourth one.